Chal Anderson is a North Shore naturalist. She lives here in Cook County and joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome back, Chal.
Thanks, Jay.
Now, we talked about Lake Superior turnover at the beginning of winter. Now let's talk about it during the spring.
Yeah, let's. That's a great topic. We've talked about how during most of the year, there's something called the thermocline that develops in the lake. And that's that thermal barrier that prevents water moving from the surface deeper down, because water is heaviest at 39 degrees. So if water is warmer or colder than that, it stays at the top and it won't move down through the water column. And things that are in the upper layer of the thermocline, above the thermocline, can't move down through the thermocline. So they stay suspended up there. And that includes things like phytoplankton, which would include single-celled algae. So these are the primary producers of the lake ecosystem. They're the plants that eat the sunlight. So they're the primary producers. So they would be a good example of an organism that isn't moving much between the upper layer and the lower layers of the thermocline. So even in the winter, we have a thermocline. But at this time of year, the thermocline starts to break down as the lake starts to warm up on the surface. And wherever that happens and the thermocline breaks down, there can be much more movement of nutrients of all kinds from the upper layers into the lower layers. And at the same time as that's going on, we have this big flush of nutrients coming into the lake. We've got snow melting, we've got rain falling, and that's coming down the rivers, and it's bringing all these nutrients from the land into the lake. And two of the key things that come as a part of that are phosphorus and silica. Why are these important?
One might ask
that. One might ask.
And I have a feeling you'll tell me.
I will. So this is a big phenomena in the lake. And so I think I'll just talk about one example of how this works. This is an example of how nutrients cycle in the lake. One example, but a very powerful piece of that. So these nutrients are being flushed into the lake, and including phosphorus and silica. Because the thermocline is disappearing or has disappeared, those nutrients are able to be mixed around well. And there's a particular group of phytoplankton that live in the lake that are called diatoms. Big part of the phytoplankton assemblage of species. And diatoms are unique among the phytoplankton in that they build this beautiful, intricate architecture for themselves. Even though they're single-celled plants, they build this beautiful architecture. And what do they build it out of? They build it out of silica. So the silica comes blasting in, and the diatoms, which have been basically used up all the silica, they're waiting for the silica to show up. And once it does, the end result of both the silica arriving and other nutrients arriving is that there's a real spurt in the population of diatoms within the lake. So, boom, population boom of diatoms. Because the thermocline is not there, as those diatoms live their short lives and die, they can fall to the bottom of the lake. Once the thermocline is established, there are very few that are going to make it down to the bottom. But at this time of year, they can make it down to the bottom. Many totally intact, dead but intact. And they settle into this thin, thin layer of sediment that's at the bottom of the lake. So they rain down like manna to the organisms that live at the bottom of the lake. So those are organisms that we refer to generally as benthic organisms, so bottom-dwelling organisms. And one of the key organisms that lives in those bottom sediments, right at the surface of the sediments, is something called Diporia, which is an amphipod, or a scud is another name for them. These are tiny little invertebrates that live their whole lives right in the very upper thinnest little layer of the sediments at the very bottom, even of the deepest parts of Lake Superior. And they feed on, among other things, but very importantly, on the diatoms that come raining down at this time of year. And they eat madly as much of this stuff as they can, because once the thermocline becomes established, then that rain of manna is going to taper off to very little. And also, the populations of other species that feed on diatoms and other phytoplanktons are going to be building, and they're going to be consuming a lot more. At this time of year, their populations are very low as well, and they haven't boosted up yet. So this is this great little window where these nutrients can make it down to the bottom, and the scuds can feast madly to get them through the next famine that's coming. Because as the diatoms consume all this flush of silica that's coming in, then their populations begin to go down. For that reason, they can't keep growing. Their populations can't keep growing. Plus, the predators are inserting themselves into the equation. So the diaporea have this feast, and then they, in a great example of a positive feedback loop that's part of the whole big nutrient cycle in the lake, as they consume all the silica that's incorporated into those diatoms, they break it up. And by breaking that up, they speed up the chemical dissolution of it, its movement back into the water column. And so it gets released back into the water column down deep. Okay, now it's stuck down deep. So how do we, that's not the best thing. And the way that gets resolved in the nutrient cycle is that when we get to the fall turnover or overturn, then there's the potential for that water down below that has the silica now in it from amphipods feasting on the diatoms is able to come up into the surface water again, and it generates another smaller diatom bloom in the fall that in turn feeds those scuds for the winter famine to come. So this invisible thing that we call turnover and invisible things we call nutrient cycles are very powerful things. They're invisible to our eyes, but they're very, very powerful and important aspects of what makes our lakes living, our all of our ecosystems living things.
And all of this is dependent on 39 degrees?
All of this is dependent on that special property of water, that it's heaviest at 39 degrees. This same kind of cycle happens on all of our inland lakes, too.
Jill Anderson, botanist and plant ecologist, thanks for helping us understand Lake Superior.
You're welcome.